This episode of the Yalabat Podcast is brought to you by Foodpanda. If you've got a knack for finding lobangs and good deals, Foodpanda is looking for their first ever Chief Savings Officer, or CSO as they call it. And as the CSO, you'll be their appointed bargain hunter and will be tasked with creating Foodpanda-centric content for their social media. In return, you get a six-month contract valued at over $21,000 because you'll get a lot of entitlements like $1,500 in monthly Foodpanda vouchers, a free one-year subscription to Panda Pro, exclusive swag and merchandise, first dibs on deals, and a $2,000 monthly Foodpanda creator fund to help you pursue your passion for creating content. So to apply, upload a one-minute video on Instagram containing a creative hack to save money on food or groceries and tag Foodpanda. But do it soon, because the deadline is 30th April 2024. You can find out all the info you need at the link in the show notes, and please, please do check it out. All the best to all of you trying it, and now, on to the podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala, your thrice weekly podcast where we talk about the hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man.
Yeah.
What?
big seismic changes.
Which, I mean, like the first topic we're going to talk about, we found out right after, literally when we stepped out of the studio on Monday, finishing the podcast, right?
Yeah, minutes after stepping out of the studio.
Yeah. When we were thinking, oh, it's been a slow local news week. And boom.
Boom.
Big news.
Like this, yeah.
Yeah. But before we jump into it, how has the week been, man?
Rocked by this news, right? Mm. It's just, you know, we thought the week was going to be a bit of a chill one, slow one after all the spitting at Bruno Mars and all the stuff that was going on.
Spitting at Bruno Mars?
Spitting at a fan, at Bruno Mars.
Who the fuck went spit at Bruno Mars?
I mean, someone spat at the Bruno Mars concert, right? Yeah.
True lah.
Fan to fan lah. Fan spit.
No, because you were saying spitting at Bruno Mars.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, then I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. So all that, I thought it was like dying out. Oh, then the Pope coming. Oh, okay, interesting. Interesting, but not like seismic lah, right?
Yeah.
Then this one, boom, just came like that.
Yeah. Occupied mainstream consciousness.
But did it occupy your consciousness?
Say no.
Like you go to sleep at night thinking about Lawrence Wong?
Nope. No. Yeah. So we're talking about the topic already. Actually, we do our little spiel before we jump in.
Of course. I'm just asking whether it affected your sleep.
No at all. Did it affect your sleep?
No, not at all. I think the weather is a bigger factor in affecting my sleep. Because it's actually been quite nice the last couple of days. Rain and everything.
And it's a nice, it rains early in the morning. Then by the time you need to get out of the house, it kind of stops. So it sets the mood.
Correct.
But it's still muggy and humid as shit.
And
I think the forecast is saying that there still will be hot days, but there'll still also be rain. So it probably hot as shit in the morning and then rain in the afternoon.
Correct.
Or vice versa.
And just a little bit of the kind of gleeful excitement for us was, I think now if you go on the MRT and you see there are some MediaCorp ads around about MediaCorp Audio, Me Listen and all that.
Mm.
And you see a little poster of a little podcast show called Afterlife Support right there. So that was a little nice moment in the last few days. Just for us to all see that little poster of that show. We had no idea.
Yeah. Serendipitous.
Just like this announcement. No idea. Exactly.
So if you can take a photo, you can tag us on Instagram, put it on Reddit.
Yeah.
We already have a photo that we can put on Reddit.
Yeah.
Right.
And tell people about it, right?
Yeah. Is there a way to easily listen, or it's all on the Me Listen app or something?
It's on the Me Listen app, but it's on Spotify as well. Afterlife Support. Check out the show that we did last year with Joe Tan that we're very, very proud of.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah. Cool.
Mm.
Awesome. And what's our spiel?
If you're new here, especially on YouTube, I know there's a lot of new people because there are a lot of people telling us to quit YouTube. the comments already. But if you're new here, thank you for subscribing, or thank you for coming by the podcast. And please tell one person about it, or subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah. And if you want to work with us, you can reach out or reach out to us at ministryoffunny.com. There's a field where you can enter your question, your query. It'll be sent to our inbox and we'll reply to you as soon as we can.
Yeah.
But just not mentioning that there are already people telling us to quit YouTube. Mm-hmm. It feels like that's a milestone, because when we reached there with Ministry of Funny, it was when we started growing pretty fast, getting pretty big. So it's like a feather in our cap. The moment you reach a point where people are telling you to stop what you're doing, right? You might be doing something right.
As the saying goes, you're nobody until somebody hates you.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. So haters, welcome as well.
Yeah.
Welcome to our channel. Welcome to our podcast.
Yes.
But yeah, right back to the main news.
Jumping right in.
That dropped on the afternoon of Monday, 15th April.
Yeah. But just to, before we start, like, I mean, what's the decision process behind, like, you know, we just finished recording on Monday.
Yeah.
And this news comes out, right? I mean, maybe we can explain your thought process a little bit of why we don't immediately want to, like, record something, even though it's such a seismic event,
I mean, because we also have, like, our cadence.
Of course, yes.
Right?
Yes.
But I think it's always... Because we have had this discussion in the past also, right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's nice to see what people are saying first.
Mm, mm.
Because these kind of things, you know, everybody will be jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Of course, to report, yes, but also a lot of jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
So just see how things play out.
Yeah. Right. I mean, because some people on Reddit, some commentators on Reddit did say, hey, maybe we need to have an emergency podcast to discuss this. But yeah, like you, like that. I mean, whether we discuss it today or tomorrow, I think the timing doesn't matter so much. But more is like, what's the aftershocks, right, from this announcement?
Yeah. But I remember, like, say, just some sort of serendipitous coincidence, like for Isuran's case. I think it was on the morning of a podcast or the day before we recorded a podcast.
Yeah.
So that one, because it fits in the cadence, because that one, it felt like, yeah, people are going to be covering it, but if we can cover it at the same time, why not? I guess this one, it wasn't something that was... like going to have immediate impact.
Correct. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Let things sit.
Yeah.
But so overall, before we dive into like some of the details, how you feel, Terrence? Do you feel excited about the future?
I think actually it was a little bit of a premonition in our last podcast where we were talking about how the Pope's visit would affect the timing of the GE, the next GE and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think someone pointed out that you made a prediction about when the handover would happen, you know, that it would have to probably happen before all of this, right?
Yeah,
before
but isn't that kind of common thinking already?
But it could still take place after September, right? Before the PAP, election of anniversary thing in November.
That means the election will come later, like the following year or something.
Yeah. Correct. So all the pieces are starting to fall into place. So it's quite interesting that, you know, we discuss it, then there's a new announcement that affects how we think about it. And even this one, this is a move that also is worth like taking a look closer look at.
So you're saying it's another step on the road to becoming like the CNA guest during the elections.
Oh,
the alongside analysis, Eugene Tan, yeah.
No. I think we still bring something different to the table. I think we do.
That's why it's a step. Yeah. Like we will bring something different to the table. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a table there.
Exactly.
And we'll bring something different.
Yeah.
So it is kind of like a step.
Correct.
It's a step. Cool. But yeah, going back to your feeling, Terrence. How you feel? Like between like pre-announcement on Monday and now?
I mean, not much changes. You knew this was coming already, right? But it's just, when the announcement actually happens, that's when it hits you that this is happening. Right?
Yeah.
And, the flurry of tributes to Lee Hsien Loong, it tells you that these people have been prepping for this for a damn long time. And I'm not just talking about government people. I'm talking about like, mothership or news agencies and all that. They already prepared the videos. They already milestones.
I haven't seen the videos.
Yeah, videos of like milestones in Lee Hsien Loong's life. And I think mothership even did like I don't know whether they used bots or something. I mean they used a software but they analyzed like his Facebook profile.
So
they did like a GIF of all his profile pictures or something like that and how many selfies he took and what he did on his social media. So this has been going on. I mean people have been prepping for this already, right?
I guess it makes sense given that they did make the announcement that Lawrence Wong will take over before the PAP annual conference this year, right?
Correct.
In 2023. Yeah. So I guess as a outlet, you probably want to prep any time to go.
But not us. We're like caught underway. We're like, oh shit, oh god damn it, we gotta record a podcast.
But what can we do? There's stuff we could do, but screw it, man. We react to the news of the day. We try to actually, we don't really prep that far in advance.
I mean, the most off the top of my head, the most basic thing is if we could have got Lawrence Wong on a podcast before he became before he's slated to become prime minister.
Yeah.
Because now he's going to be like stocks even busier.
Damn,
right?
Hard to get, like, yeah.
Damn hard to get, like, yeah.
Yeah, but so I mean, basically, you're saying no change in feeling.
Not much.
Yeah,
about you?
Same, no change. Because I mean, it's one of those things that, yeah, it didn't come as a surprise. Maybe it was just a bit surprising that it came now.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, between the time the announcement is made and the swearing in, it is unusually short.
Oh, 1 month.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because for previous PM, I mean, PM Lee, Goh Chok Tong, and Lee Kuan Yew, I mean, Lee Kuan Yew didn't have anyone to take over.
Mm.
But the other two were a bit more runway.
I see.
A bit more, a bit faster. So, yeah, 1 month. I think even at the doorstop interview, Lawrence Wong was saying that when someone asked him about the National Day rally, he said his focus is now for the swearing in.
Yeah.
And he has only a month.
Yeah.
And he mentioned there's going to be some cabinet tweakings, but most of the reshuffles will come after the election.
The election, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he has asked Lee Hsien Loong to stay on as senior minister, which he will.
Yeah.
So yeah, Lee will still be there, right?
Lee will still be there. Correct.
But when there was the announcement came out, and then there was a video that I think Lawrence Wong himself put out, right?
Yeah, the vertical video. Yeah, with the flag
vertical. Yeah. Did it, I mean, it struck me, and I think some people online, it struck me as it looked very, there's something very fake about it. It looked almost AI generated. Something about the, I don't know, it's the makeup or the lighting or the filter that they put on his face. It looked quite fake. Did you get the sense?
No, I didn't.
You saw it? No?
Yeah, I just thought it was like, okay, it's a video that he's doing in some room.
Yeah. It just looked very, I mean, for an AI skeptic like me, right?
Yeah.
I live and breathe, being skeptical.
Skepticism.
Skeptical about these things.
Yeah.
It looked very, something a bit off about it, I felt. The sheen on his face and everything.
Or is it just the way he was talking also?
I mean, people have also pointed out he does have a bit of a, he draws out his syllables a little bit, right?
A bit mechanical also.
Yeah. I don't begrudge him. And this is after watching a lot of those press conferences where he was really speaking off the cuff sometimes, right? It's just his style of talking, right?
Yeah.
And the way he pronounces things that is a little different from an average, what you imagine a typical Singaporean would speak like. Is someone who's probably educated overseas or has lived or worked with a lot of foreigners. And maybe also, a little bit of a bias towards, I would say, more Hong Kong style of accented English.
Oh, really?
I feel. Yeah. But that's what I feel, right?
Yeah.
But, how accurate it is, I'm not sure. But it added, maybe it added to the overall aura of, this video feels very AI generated. And you remember there was that whole deep fake thing of him selling crypto. So I was like, whoa, shit, these crypto guys are working hard over time and producing these videos for him. Yeah.
That was on his Facebook and TikTok and Instagram everywhere.
You mean his video?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as high production quality as his slow-mo video walking to deliver the budget.
But as a content creator, I also have to say another thing. For vertical video, the rule of thirds thing doesn't really make sense in this case. You know the rule of thirds where...
Yes, Terrence, the rule of thirds.
But it works for horizontal 16:9.
Yeah.
Or, widescreen, whatever. But when it comes to vertical video, it just... Maybe that's why it made me feel a bit off at that. Why is he so... Why is he almost... squeezed on one side of the screen. Singapore flag on the other side, yes, but it was just added to the overall feel of the video being a bit strange.
So maybe for the uninformed, you can just briefly talk through the rule of thirds so you can feel better about yourself also.
It's just generally when you watch shows or movies or anything, generally people frame their shots where the key subject in the frame is at the one third part of the of the video, one third of the horizontal length of the video. I think whether it's convention or whether it's just the way our eyes perceive the world, that seems to be most comfortable, right? It brings more comfort to people actually looking at
In some
screen,
way, you also on the third, right? Your face not, if they're watching on YouTube.
Yeah. We do consciously try to do it. I think, but for vertical video, a lot of times, smack in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And that's what, over time, we've learned while doing more and more videos. So, yeah, just something about the video. In Hollywood, there's the whole thing when you tilt the camera angle, the Dutch angle, right? And it's meant to make people feel a bit off, something is off about the scene. So there was something a little bit off about this whole video, based on all the choices.
Trying to unsettle you, Darren. He's like, I can stand right in the middle with the flag behind me. No, I'm going to go a bit to the side because that is the he said he wants change, right?
He wants change. He wants to unsettle you.
Yeah, unsettle you.
But that's not what we want. That's not what you want from your first speech, right? When you're about to take over as prime minister. You want to make people feel comfort and hope for a new age and all that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I learned a fun fact that he's the first prime minister born after our independence.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a bevy of prime ministers to do a comparison.
Correct.
I think I see some jokes saying that you'll definitely go down as one of the top five prime ministers regardless of how he performs.
They say at least hello, top three prime
top
ministers.
Top three.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. So I mean, like the announcement also came, I wouldn't say muted, but there was no big fanfare. I think Lee Hsien Loong posted online. On his social media and X as well. He's on X.
Yeah.
Something like, okay, this will happen. Then I think that night itself, Lawrence Wong went about his meet the people session in Limbang, I think. So it felt like, pretty muted. And now everything feels like it's just been a formality, like all these checklists of items they have to do. But nothing, I mean, you also wouldn't expect a cabinet reshuffle when he's sworn in.
Correct.
I know there's been a lot of questions asked about whether this will speed up or delay the GE. Mm. There was one interview he did. I mean, he delivered a short speech and then he answered some questions from the press. And I think it was the last question when someone said, what are your priorities for in the near future? And he said, didn't I already say that?
Yeah.
And then he went on to say, So I was like, wow, a bit of a passive aggression there.
I think But you know, he is pretty good with off the cuff kind of questions in media. And I think the COVID-19, the whole multi-ministry task force. MMTF.
No, the acronym is MTF.
MTF. But multi-ministry is one M, right? He showed that he can not say inspire, but at least give confidence, right? Mm. Make people feel a bit confident about what we know and what we don't know. And that's not easy, especially when you're dealing with crises like that. In that sense, you can say that, you know, he was blooded already, right, before becoming prime minister, where he was in the hot seat for one of the biggest crises that that Singapore has ever faced.
And the world.
Yeah.
And I mean, he hasn't been in politics that long. Since 2011 only,
Correct. I remember attending, was it like Southeast Asian Games opening or Youth Olympic Games opening or something. I got invited, so I went there and watched. And he was the minister that was opening the games. And
was he minister already?
I'm not sure, but he was basically the guest honor opening the games, giving a speech and all that kind of thing. And I remember, this guy, he's so smiley and so happy. And I was like, wow, who is this guy? Like, he looks like he's just, here to enjoy the ride, rather than be leading the charge, But I guess, age plus, over the years, he's had time to build up that capability as well.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been in civil service throughout. I think his first career, first job was as an economist working at the MTI. It was at the start of the Asian financial crisis. Then he went to MOF in 2002, MOH in 2004.
Yep.
He was a director of healthcare finance until May 2005. Then he was a principal private secretary to PM Lee between May 25 and August 2008, which I didn't know.
Okay. And May 2005, you said.
Yeah,
okay.
He was a principal private secretary.
Okay.
And the principal private secretary is still considered a civil servant. He's not a politician, but he's responsible to the minister. And
is he right hand?
He was PM Lee.
Right hand man.
Right hand man. And then 2008, September, he became the deputy CEO of the Energy Market Authority. And then the next year, he took over as CEO. Then he joined politics in 2011.
Yeah, and I think he joined politics in his late 30s.
Late 30s. Yeah, and I mean, contrast, I think he's the oldest PM. Incumbent PM. Because Lee Kuan Yew was 36.
Yep.
Koh Chok Tong was 49.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
PM Lee was 50
plus, right?
PM Lee was 50 plus. No, now he's maybe late 40s.
I don't know. But I mean, there's a chart somewhere you can find. Everyone has produced these charts everywhere.
That's true.
You're not far off the mark.
Yeah, but you know, like going back to what you were saying about the way Lawrence Wong speaks, I actually like the way he speaks.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But at the same time, it is one of those ways of speaking that, how you say that? Because you know, like when you see leaders around the world, they all have like very strong personalities.
Mm.
To me, Lawrence Wong, he doesn't have a strong personality, for better or worse.
Mm.
Sometimes you don't want people who have a strong personality.
Yep.
But when I listen to him, I'm like, okay, it's neutral, it's somewhat assuring, but maybe we just haven't, like, we've heard him a lot. It doesn't feel like there's something very unique. This might just be a personal, subjective take.
Okay, so of all the 4G ministers who were, you know, rumored to be the next...
Yeah.
Who do you think has that strong personality or that strong way of speaking?
The 4G would be
Chan Chun Sing, Ong Yi Kang.
Even Desmond Lee, right? At some point. Tan Chuan Jin at some point.
And then Long Go.
Long ago.
Heng Swee Keat. I mean, remember? He was slated to be PM at first.
Yeah. I would say actually Chan Chun Sing. Yeah.
Could the cottons come from sheep?
Yeah. I mean, in the sense, when I say a strong personality, it's just something that you hear only, you know, is Chan Chun Sing.
Mm.
And I think it might be the way he speaks, his language also. But I think, yeah, maybe strong has too many, like, you know, like warrior connotations. But you just feel there's something that stands out. Mm. Whereas Lawrence Wong feels like what you say, I could imagine you go into some AI and say, okay, someone who's supposed to be stately.
Yeah.
You know, like diplomatic.
Yeah.
And all that, and that voice will come out.
But you generally tend towards trusting authority, right? That's
general. Hey, fuck you, okay? What? Hey, please.
Generally more deferential to authority.
No, if I were there, would we even be doing this podcast?
No. I refute that.
Okay, before you interrupt,
you're always into like man crushes. Like, that's your thing, right? That's, you always say that. I got this man crush on this guy and all that.
Yeah, people who inspire me, motivate me.
Like, it feels like there's a lot of like, wow. You know,
idolizing
of strong men, you know,
strong women.
I don't know if you say I have a woman crush. You only talk about hot women, but you don't talk about women.
But you very readily, a lot of accusations, though.
I feel you quite readily like, oh, this guy's so great, I have a man crush.
I do. So but that doesn't mean I'm deferential to authority.
Okay, fine. We can separate those two things. Yeah. But I'm just saying that maybe that's where someone like Chan Chun Sing, who comes from the military, is very used to speaking in a very, I'm an authority kind of way, thing about it. Appeals more to you, Because actually, to me...
Okay, I wouldn't say appeals.
Okay.
Appeals. I would just say it's a characteristic.
You use the word strong, which is a positive connotation.
That's why I corrected myself that it might be too much of a like positive thing. I'm just saying a unique. Okay, maybe unique.
Yeah, okay.
Unique word, Terrence.
Relax. Nobody's questioning your masculinity.
No, because you fucking pin this brush on me and like make assertions about like my deference to authority. Then I'm like, hey, Terrence, please, back up, okay?
No. What I would say is that maybe for me, someone in Lawrence Wong style who is a bit more consultative in how he speaks to people appeals more to me than Chan Chun Sing. That's what I would say, right?
Yeah.
And I don't, in fact, there have been news outlets, I mean, a couple of news articles, or at least one that I've seen, that said that Lawrence Wong doesn't have as clear a direction in what his vision is for Singapore and everything. So that corroborates with what you're saying, right? Where the way he speaks maybe is a bit more like consultative or not so like strong or unique, like you unique, say, it doesn't stand out so much.
Yeah, unique.
But I mean, it could be a down to a personality thing also. What appeals to you? What has traumatized me in the past affects what I would want to look for in a leader in the future.
To answer the question that I did not answer previously about which style appeals to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the way Chan Chun Sing speaks appeals to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying that his is the unique one.
But yeah, no man crusher.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Political man crushers always different, because as a politician, there's a lot that, I mean, in some way, there's a lot of theatrics.
Yes.
Right. And it's difficult to develop an intellectual man crush on someone, man or woman, if they're a politician, because it almost feels like there's a lot of theatrics involved.
Correct. Yeah. But that's it. I've heard people who have worked with Chan Chun Sing or under Chan Chun Sing, whatever, who's gushed of him in that way.
Mm.
Like, whoa, this guy's
super smart
super
and all.
Smart, everything. And I always try and drill down, like, what do you mean by super smart? Can you give me an example of why you think he's super smart? And it always boils down to something about when in a group he's able to like talk to everyone and gather everyone's thoughts and then put it on a page and then put it in a word cloud, something like that, that looks very smart. But I listen to it, I'm like, that sounds like how my army meetings used to be. And after that, I walk out, I'm like, what the hell just happened? Like nothing took place. So I don't know about you, but I have yet to experience that, you know, that Chan Chun Sing, like the aura around his brilliance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I that's why when you tell me your unique or strong personality, I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm still remain a bit more, reserved.
Then do any one of them stand out to you as like, how would you say is a defining trait or like the difference between those that were in the running? In terms of their persona and their public image.
I think a very big thing for Lawrence Wong was COVID-19.
Yeah,
the fact that he headed up those press conferences and then we all laughed about how heads, when you ask a difficult question, then everyone's head would turn and then
to him.
They look at him. I hardly remember him really like turning away or deferring to someone else for an answer. And a lot of times he would have to give the messy answer that nobody wants to hear, right?
Mm.
And I don't remember him shying away from doing that. And I respect that, you know. To me, that is strength. It's not about being strong in the way you speak, but about like when the going gets tough, you can still speak confidently and still reassuredly and not like dismissive or passive aggressive or anything.
And I mean, I think COVID, to Lawrence Wong's credit, that was his coming of age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I totally agree that at every point, even when there was the changes of wearing the mask or not wearing the mask, because apparently at one point, he and his team made a decision to not mandate people wear masks.
Yeah.
But then when the data showed otherwise, they did a U-turn. And even then, it never felt like you're listening to someone who doesn't seem like he's got conviction. So that one, I totally credit him.
Mm.
But I was coming more from maybe it is a big change for a leader to not be like the traditional, assertive type. But then on the other hand, just you look at the global situation now with like how things are developing. Because I saw some people saying that, when Lee Kuan Yew took over, it was a much tougher time. I don't know, man. I think now it is like pretty damn tough also. The challenges are different. Like Singapore is facing a whole bunch of different challenges. And maybe it's also because in my head, I'm just imagining, like political headbutts, going toe-to-toe with someone.
Yeah.
And the traditional way of holding your ground means that you need to have like a forceful or strong or assertive personality. There are very different ways to do it.
Correct.
But just listening to the speeches so it doesn't feel like, okay, maybe we just haven't seen it.
Correct.
Maybe what happens behind closed doors, because I think over the years also, as you grow up, you realize there are many different styles of leadership.
Yeah.
Right? I won't deny that when I was young, I was like, a leader must be like
the loudest person.
But now I'm like, not at all. In fact, sometimes people who talk a lot are the biggest full of shit. Right? But just as a politician where there's a lot of public interaction, just feel like, how is this going to pan out?
Correct. And I mean, on that, recently he was in Paris, right?
Mm.
And he met Macron, French president, and they stood side by side. And what immediately struck me was like, they are about the same height.
Mm.
So then I looked up Macron's height. I think he's like 176 or 179, somewhere there. Not that tall, right? Not that tall, but especially global averages. Singapore average is lower than the global average, so to speak, or Western average, I don't know. But I think that's also important in terms of when you go to meetings and all that, we talk about politics as theatrics, being physically imposing somewhat, right?
Yeah.
And I think Lee Kuan Yew if I'm not wrong, I think he did mention that about Heng Swee Keat before. That Heng Swee Keat is a person with much smaller stature.
Oh, he said that.
Yeah, I believe so. I it's in my memory somewhere. Correct me if I'm wrong, anyone on the internet. I'm not 100% sure, but there was some talk about how Heng Swee Keat's smaller stature might be a disadvantage when it comes to dealing with world leaders and all that, right?
Mm.
Because you're talking about you know, like the Putins and the Netanyahu's and all that, Yeah. So when you meet in person and having that like what you said, a forceful appearance and all, could actually be an advantage in these kind of negotiations, right?
Yeah.
So, but, I don't know, man. We'll see.
But maybe that's the old age thinking that needs to evolve.
Correct. But at the same time, Trump is lining up to fight for the presidency of the US and all that. And you know what Trump is like and how it's going to look like, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when Trump came and there was all these photo opportunities with Lee Hsien Loong and things like that. And Lee Hsien Loong's very tall. He can hold his ground, right? Mm-hmm. Same for Goh Chok Tong. Also, yeah. The swimmer last time, all that, can hold his ground.
Yeah.
Lawrence Wong, I think, probably shorter than both of them.
And you know, PM Lee has mastered the ability to say something, smile, and then immediately go back to like just a stone face.
Yeah.
You know, when he delivers a National Day rally or any speech, there'll be a smile that comes up and he goes back. So, Lawrence Wong, I'm sure we would definitely see more instances of him like, you know, having to really put his foot down. But or maybe it's just a different style. Because during COVID, I can imagine so many times where there were different opinions.
Yeah.
And there was no point where it felt like he was weak. So
but you think him singing Taylor Swift songs makes him stronger or weaker?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of like politicians making videos like that. I won't deny. Because I'm like, okay, then I get you want to show your personality and all, but I hope people also don't vote solely on personality. It's more about character,
Correct.
And character, you make a Taylor Swift video, you playing guitar doesn't mean shit to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it means a lot to some people, right?
But if they're voting because Lawrence Wong is cool, can play guitar, ride motorbike, all, that's also not good, right?
Is it he rides motorbikes?
Yeah,
he rides
I found out today also.
Oh, is it? How do you know?
Like on one of those articles, seven things you didn't know about our incoming PM. I'm like, hey, this is not a motorbike license. Apparently, he got motorbike license.
Must check, yeah.
Yeah, like, there was that one article, yeah.
Wow, so, gangster.
Gangster, no. Wow, play guitar,
I got motorbike license,
So I mean, it feels like a very different, there is some talk. I mean, even in his speech, he mentioned that, you know, he doesn't claim, I think this was a speech last year at the PAP event.
Yeah.
He doesn't claim to have all the answers.
Correct, yeah.
He doesn't claim to know, exactly what to do in any situation, but he's always going to be listening first.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might be different approach because I was reading up and I think Goh Chok Tong in his book he did say that listening is important but sometimes you have to be deaf because
wow fucking what? It's such an
old school thing. Listening Darren's is good but once in a while I must be deaf must be deaf. So I mean I don't think that's paraphrasing his quote but he definitely said the word deaf because I think when he took over PAP lost a bit of share in the election. When PM Lee took over. So I think Goh Chok Tong, when reflecting on that, he said, after that he realized, okay, there are times you need to listen, but at times you need to be deaf. Not all opinions are worth.
So you know, on the back of what we're talking about the last podcast about the Pope coming.
Yeah.
So how do you think this changes you know, the date of the election and all that?
Yeah.
Because this is a new piece of information since our last podcast.
I don't think it changes.
No.
Yeah. Because
I'm saying because some analysts have said that this seems like a very accelerated timeline, you know.
Also, you mean even a snap election?
Yeah. So that word has come up in some headlines of is there a possibility of a snap election like, you know, to build on the goodwill of Taylor Swift and all these things happening. Before the PAP convention in November. Because someone pointed out that he said in his last speech that, you know, once the leadership handover happens, he's looking to come to the next, I think paraphrasing, but he's looking to come to the next PAP convention with a refreshed leadership. So people are saying, does that mean the election will happen before November, right?
I don't think it would change. Like, let's say if I had to make an estimate now, before this announcement and now this announcement, it doesn't change my guess. And my guess is October.
October, okay.
Yeah, for you? But let's say if you had to guess.
If I'm a betting man, and there are a lot of people betting, like they're buying the date, the 1505.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the 4D number of the date of handover, and it's sold out already, apparently, for next week, next one. But if I'm a betting man, I would say that I would not do it before the Pope comes.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
Because you think about it, like, imagine you're setting up your Tinder profile, and then you know that tomorrow you're going to have a chance to meet The Rock and then appear on his Instagram and take a photo of The Rock.
Yeah.
Do you not want to wait until you take a photo of The Rock, then you can post that as your Instagram profile first? So if you are like incoming, or at least like going to become PM, don't you want to go into like elections with even having had a photo opportunity with the Pope, you know?
I mean, I agree with what you're getting at, but maybe different starting point. My thought was that when you're going into an election, you never know what could happen, right?
Okay.
The statistics for the last two PMs was when they become PM, their first election, the percentage of the vote the PAP get is less than the last one.
Yeah.
So meeting the Pope after an election feels like suddenly some shit goes wrong in the election and you don't do as well as you thought. I don't think we would change the government, but it just feels like if you're going to be meeting a world leader, maybe don't do it right after election, because you never know what could happen.
No, I'm talking about, so I think it will happen after, it has to happen after you meet the Pope.
Oh, same lah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so that's why for me, I agree with you, but the starting point is not for the photo opportunity.
To me, it's all about the photo opportunity. To me, it's like, it'll be them tactically stupid to not use that as an opportunity to like really buttress yourself as like the chosen one, you know.
Mm.
I meet the Pope.
Someone get blessed.
Yeah, once every 40 years, this
guy
comes.
But that can still happen like after the election, right?
But you want to go into the election with as much ammunition as possible. This guy's literally coming to your doorstep.
Divine ammunition.
He can't escape you. He got off his plane. You just wait down there to take photo of him already. Lor. Who's going to deny you an opportunity to take photo of him? Right. It's a given. It's def 100%.
And then, it probably won't be after the Pope because there's F1.
Yeah, then there's F1.
But November, like, feels like it's holiday, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. I think it has October.
October.
That's my bet now. Okay. For you also?
It feels like, I feel like, there's a lot of goodwill, or at least like things that have been set in place at the start of this year, you know, Taylor Swift and the whole hoo-ha about Singapore as a hub and all that. And then now building, and then there's going to be National Day Parade and everything. You know, those really rah-rah people up, and then there's the time to strike, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then they got started on the whole Pritam Singh's court case and everything also at the same time.
Yeah, you know? But then there's Iswaran's court case also.
Yeah, but the one, you know, the one is going to be long drawn. I don't think it'll be done even before the elections.
But I mean, there's also Olympics. But Olympics, I mean, Shanti Pereira is going to Olympics, even though she recently got injured.
Damn, yeah.
Yeah, so fucking hope. It still goes well, but I mean, it's not. I don't think we're going to be getting some like gold medal that is going to bring the country together or something like.
Yeah.
The odds of that are very slim.
I
don't think that's going to factor much.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that has come up in discussion is also what's going to happen to some of the current 3G ministers, whether they will step up to become DPM or SM. Yeah. One of whom is Shanmugam. You know, there's
3G. He's considered 3G.
Isn't he 3? He's 4G.
I think he's somewhere
3.5
between 3.5.
He's like a software update, lah.
Yeah. Because he's been law minister since 2008, but you know, law ministers apparently we've only had three in our history, and so they can serve for 20 years on that.
So he's 3.5G, lah.
So 3.5G. He might. I think Shanmugam will still be around for a while.
So I mean, some analysts have said he might become SM. Because right now there are two SMs who would at least remain on for the near future.
Yeah.
Then Lee Hsien Loong is going to become SM.
Yeah.
Feels like four SMs might be a bit of an overkill.
Okay.
But then like if Lawrence Wong is going to be PM, then who's going to be DPM?
That's the big question.
Yeah. Right now Heng Swee Keat is
DPM.
DPM, right? We have two DPMs. So who knows? Suddenly Shanmugam become DPM.
Yeah.
You never know. So I mean, those sort of things will be interesting, and the reshuffle, because even, you know, like, let's say Edwin Tong, he's minister of MCCY, right?
Yeah.
So imagine if, like, wow, he feels like, you know what, next year I'm going to bring Beyonce, Adele, then suddenly change cabinet. That is like, all the work for Taylor Swift. Nothing. So, I mean, that I think will be interesting, the shakeup. Because, I mean, the handover, the succession planning, we always knew. Another thing that stood out was like, I think the only opposition who posted something was Chee Soon Juan from SDP.
Yeah.
Everyone else has, In comparison to all the tributes and congratulations for Lawrence Wong and PM Lee, yeah, pretty quiet on the opposition side.
Yeah.
I don't know what they should do. I don't know what would be good for them to do.
But it was also a bit passive-aggressive, right? Mm. Saying that he hopes for more enlightened leadership.
Yeah. So, interesting. But yeah, that's why when you started by saying this seismic news is a seismic news.
Seismic or seismic? I think I say size.
Seismic.
Seismic
activity.
Is it seismic or seismic, guys?
Seismic news.
Seismic, okay.
The repercussions not that seismic.
But it is still, you think about the history, the short history of our country, it's always been somewhat associated with Lee Kuan Yew, right?
Mm.
Lee Kuan Yew, Goh Chok Tong is successor, but Lee Hsien Loong was waiting in the wings and Lee Hsien Loong took over.
Yeah.
But the Lee family, the influence of the Lee family, seems to be getting smaller, right?
Mm.
So in that sense, it's still a big shakeup, right?
Yeah.
In our country's history. Yeah.
But he'll still be SM. So
Correct. But definitely not the face of the country so much. Mm, yeah.
Now there's a third surname for PM. There was Lee Go Wong.
Yeah. Lee Go and Wong.
Lee Go Wong.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool.
Cool, man.
But yeah, speaking of seismic news as well, there was also another announcement that on surface looks like it will affect a lot of workers, right? But on closer inspection, maybe some people have pointed out, does this really mean anything, right?
Mm.
And what is this piece of news for workers?
It is the announcement that that came out 15th April, Monday. All employers, let me get a more sensationalized headline. Okay, never mind. Basically, come December 2024, employees will have the ability to request for flexible work arrangements from their employer. Similarly, all employers must also have a process for their workers to request the FWAs. It was announced, I think there's been a lot of talk over the past 1-2 years, and they announced this, and they explain the process, and there are certain conditions, even flexible work arrangements, there are three types. Flexi place, where you work from outside office, flexi time, where you work at different timings, and flexi load, where employees can take different workloads according to their pay. And the process is, before we go into the process, when you saw this, this has been in the works, it feels like there's been a lot of discussions about it for a long time already, right?
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, so when you first heard about this, what did you think?
The headlines saying that all employers must have process for workers to request flexible work arrangements. The first thing that I was asking was is this going to be mandated as a rule or what is it going to be, right? Because it sounds on the surface, it sounds like something good, right? That employers must have a process, right? But I guess the devil's in the details. What happens if employers don't have that process in place, right?
Mm.
Is there punishments given to them or what? Is there going to be any punitive kind of action against employees who don't do this properly, right?
Yeah. So, even later in the article, they say employees should have a process for employees to submit formal requests, such as through a work portal or email, and that employees should follow any requirements. But if there are no stipulations or no processes, the employee could make a formal request that includes date of request, FWA arrangement, expected frequency, duration, reason for request, and if applicable, the start and end date of the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the binary thing is whether it's a formal request or an informal request.
Yeah.
The moment you make a formal request, the employer has to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And they can reject, but this must be based on, I quote, reasonable business grounds and not personal bias against FWAs. Basically, you have a boss who just hates work from home. So you need to be able to back it up. And you can also reject if it's impractical, if there's no capacity to change. Feels like there are some guide rails in place.
Yeah.
But what stuck out to you when you went into the details?
I mean, ultimately, there's not a lot of teeth to these guidelines, right?
Mm.
They can call them rules, but at the end of the day, they are guidelines because the only way that someone can complain is to TAFEP directly, and then TAFEP is to engage with the company and all that, right?
Mm.
So it's not really like a law or anything that you know, someone can be punished by. It's basically, TAFEP just telling companies that, hey, you should do this, and if you don't do it, we will talk to you, right?
Mm.
So, you go online and you read about what people are saying about this, and surprisingly, it's a lot more nuanced than what I imagined.
Mm.
I thought people would be like, this one wayang lah, it's useless lah, that kind of thing. But actually, there was a lot of discussion about why, not just about flexi work arrangements, right? But why certain things that are happening in other countries, like proposed a right to disconnect law, or even a 4-day work week. Why those might not actually even be a good answer to the kind of productivity woes that developed nations are facing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, people are pointing out that, hey, you know, Singapore used to have a 5.5-hour work week, and then later 5.5-day work week, and then now it became, now then in the 90s or something, it became 5 days, right?
Yeah.
So we actually saw the transition, not for ourselves, but our parents, right? And if that can be done, why not go to a 4-day work week, right? But people are saying that, hey, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about whether it's 4 days or 5 days, but it's about the fact that a lot of times there's an expectation that if you don't finish your work, you got to do OT, or you're going to bring home your work and finish it until midnight and things like that, right?
Mm.
So even if you squeeze all that into 4 days, the fact that you can be contacted outside of work and everything, it's still the same, right? You'll still be end up working 5 days a week.
Yeah.
I would say that surprised me about the online discussions about this thing, right?
Mm.
But for you, was there anything that you saw that struck you as an interesting take on this topic?
Nothing that I saw per se. I mean, some people are pointing out that this is just another useless process that has no meaning.
Mm.
But when I look at it, it sounds like another layer of bureaucracy.
Mm.
Because for smaller companies, sometimes a lot of the processes that are already in place at bigger companies are a little more flexible. You know, when I was working in a corporate, you want to take leave, you have to go through an entire process.
Mm.
But for smaller companies, it's more like a discussion. And if you still get your work done and all, it doesn't really matter too much as long as it's not being abused. So in this case, it felt like, is this going to just be a meaningless layer? But I actually think that this is still a step in the direction that hopefully we can hit.
Mm.
Because changing to four-day work week, I think in Singapore, is going to be impossible in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
To just go from 5 days to 4 days feels like, wow, that is a huge change. Because literally the way industries and all work would have to shift. So in this case, on one hand, you're giving more work to the employer and you're making them be the bad guy. But I feel like if it's just kickstarting a process that people can take, I don't think it's that bad a thing. I don't think it's that bad a thing. I think, of course, there'll be people who abuse it.
Mm.
Of course, there'll be asshole employers who just everything reject, and it probably some would turn ugly. Mm. But it felt like it's still a step that I was surprised by.
At least it's formalizing the idea of flexible work arrangements. Such that let's say you're a single mother or something like that, you don't have to be so fearful of asking. You can ask because it's mandated that you can ask, right?
Yeah,
you don't have to fear repercussions just for asking.
Yeah.
Which I think, last time was always like that, right? Even taking leave and all that, such a big question mark.
Yeah.
It's been a while since COVID and everything, right? And I remember last time, every time we meet people, it's in work meetings and all, one of the favorite icebreaker questions is, hey, you're back to office full time already.
Mm. Now that's much your less, favorite icebreaker question. Right? Everyone's probably shut up, Terrence.
No, I think people like to talk about it. Because it's different for everyone.
If they have an arrangement that works for them, if they go back to the office, you're just making them really trauma.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of people who, now it's still 3 days off, 2 days at home, things like that. I feel people are open to talk about it open to hear what other companies are doing also.
Mm.
But now I'm hearing more and more everyone's just back 5 days and everything, right?
Mm.
You think You think maybe people overstated how flexi work would change industries and everything? You think it's been overstated and are we just reverting back to normal?
Actually, I don't think it's overstated because, I mean, more companies than not, even from interactions with people, because I also like asking the same question. There seems to be some arrangement. I think it's quite rare that I meet someone from a company that all 5 days have to go back. If they're not in a front-facing kind of industry, or if they work at a clinic or something, you kind of have to be there. But the thing that why I think this is definitely something that is, cynical or not, it's in some way, yes, about worker welfare and all, but it also addresses another problem that people in Singapore are getting old. And I mean, they were also quite open about it, saying that part of the reason is because more people have caregiving duties. And I think if that is the reason behind it, then this feels like, it's not just about the compassionate compassion for worker welfare or anything. It's because there's this bigger reason that the government is facing this bigger issue. So I mean, if the motivation is not entirely for worker welfare but more to solve a pressing problem, but at the end of the day, like what you say, I think the biggest thing is that it accepts that flexible work arrangements is now a part of work. We cannot run away from it already. And that I feel is like, at least that feels like it's a bit more progressive. Which is why I was actually surprised by this. I know even 2022, people were talking like the labor chief Ng Chee Meng 2022 said that flexible work arrangements is a key focus of Singapore's new workers compact. This was in 2023, so yeah, it felt like it was in the works, but yeah, this one I felt definitely there'll be shit to deal with, like requests getting abused, rejected and all, but feels like biggest thing is that it acknowledges it.
And something Singapore, again, we are quite unique situation, not better but necessarily better but unique, right, in a sense that our transportation system, public transport system, is quite robust. Island's very small, so you really can get from one side to another not that long, whether you're driving or taking public transport, right? Our internet is very fast, right? Internet is quite fast and quite available in all places. No, like, dead
except
spots,
tengah
dead
except
zones.
Tengah.
Yeah, except tengah. And, some parts of Lim Chu Kang and stuff like that. So, right? Compared to other places, where you really have to plan your commute very carefully. If not, you're stuck in traffic for like 2-3 hours on your way back home or on the way to work, Singapore, we have less of those issues, So, maybe it makes us a real, that's where flexible working arrangements can really make more sense also, right? Where we, we just embrace the fact that we're a very connected society and everyone, we have easier access to internet than a lot of other places and all that, right? And, we've been preparing for this digital shift with, with SingPass and everything. So we can do the work that we need to do at home. We really don't need to follow what other countries are necessarily doing because they have their own situations with public transport and all that thing as well, right?
But where's the skepticism, Terence?
They're just in whether there's any teeth to enforce this rule, right? I feel that's one aspect. But overall, I feel, at least something is being formalized about the idea of flexible work arrangements. It's not seen like a dirty word that you can't say to your boss or in the office.
Right? Yeah, I mean, then, I saw another article, I think by CNA also, saying that, are flexible arrangements like this going to be good for women or set women back? Then I'm like, because, their argument is that, it might enforce gender stereotypes if the woman is expected to take FWA to do caregiving, Then I'm like, there will always be, that the other side of it. And, this one will confirm have abuse. We all know the wonderful PIC grant that was there last time. It was great for SMEs.
Yeah.
Until someone got the grant to build a ring for...
Social escort website.
Social escorts, yeah. They got government money. Yeah. To build a website for social escorts.
Yeah.
And then the whole grant got taken away. So these kind of things, there will definitely be disputes. I think feels like, it's still formalizing it. Come December.
So how has your take on flexible work arrangements changed over your career, in corporate world and then working for yourself and everything? So
I think there is definitely benefit to having time to just do work and not be distracted. But I also do see a lot of value in people coming together to do work if the work necessitates it. Like, I mean, even for us, the decision to stop recording from home and coming here, I think it's brought a lot of value to the podcast. And even as a team, you know, like, there is, you can't run away from the fact that we are social creatures and that sort of things help. Does it need to be every day from like 9 to 5, 9 to 6? That one, I don't think so. For you?
Yeah. I think that collaboration online has become so powerful and robust in recent years, right? Not even like 10 years ago. You know, a lot of the tools that we use today, I cannot imagine like them existing. They look like quantum leaps in communication, right? From 10 years ago, you know, using Notion and being able to on the fly see people taking notes and stuff like that. That's just crazy. It might be even more efficient than sitting in a room together and just talking and one person taking notes and nobody can read what he's writing, right? So actually, I think there's a very strong case for really like just trying to move towards that model in the future for any company.
That means fully remote.
Not say fully but I think definitely a hybrid. And then real estate also is not getting any cheaper, right? So, you know, all the big tech companies are downsizing and, you know, removing tables in the office or doing hot desking and stuff like that. Because sometimes meetings, sometimes I think face-to-face is very important. But once the meeting is done, you need to go and send your email. I don't care whether you send it while sitting in the toilet or at your desk, right? Unless you are unless you're in that industry where you are required to, you know, be present, like customer-facing, then different. But we are quite privileged in the sense that our work, we can do remotely and everything. So we should try and embrace it.
And this is not even talking about the apps you can use to sit in on your meeting and transcribe everything and churn out meeting notes.
Like Okta AI
and stuff like that, right?
So
I think it's good to have an arrangement because like even between couples and families, it's helpful.
Well, using Notion between couples and stuff like that.
No, fucking FWA okay? Like, as much as I mentioned that me and my wife did like the year planning and year on year, we are not one of those couples that use Notion. I know Tristan sent something in the chat that day about a husband using Notion with his wife. That's not me, man.
I thought it was a dig.
Of course. But that's not me. Another problem that we are facing as a country is the low birth rate. Can you imagine if like in future for flexible work arrangements, they say, okay, you know, I need to spend Monday and Friday because that's our baby making time.
Happy hour. Yeah.
Because that is also a problem we're facing, right? And if caregiving is one thing, love making is another, man.
But
so challenges of Singapore.
Developed city.
But yeah, man.
What is your one short comment of these past few days?
So, you have yours? I have mine. So mine is the comment from the last episode about where we talked about the Pope visiting Singapore. And longtime commenter, Bud Denhor, wrote, and I mean, she did say that it's a bit of a flex, so don't mind her, that she went to Italy back in 2016 and managed to catch the Pope speaking at the Vatican on one of the Sundays and just talked about the experience being very electrifying. In a positive way, in the sense like it was chaotic, you know, super noisy. The Pope appeared, then it was silence, and then there was cheering, praying, and people crying. Then after that, she also went to the Sistine Chapel. Because even though it's crowded, she said it was beautiful, and that made her download the Bible and read it. She's a self-proclaimed agnostic. But just to understand what she was looking at on the walls of the Sistine Chapel, which is insane. Because, you know, so many times you go to these tourist sites, it's crowded as shit, and you almost feel like, what the hell is the big deal about this place? But in this case, interesting. Because I'll be heading to Italy in June. Sistine Chapel.
So have you seen it before?
Seen pictures. I've seen pictures. That was my one short comment.
I think the Sistine Chapel really is quite something to witness in person. And just like what we're talking about, being face to face with it, it's very different from seeing in pictures, right?
Yeah. So you saw it face to face?
Yeah, I believe I did. When I backpacked as a student and everything back in the day. So, yeah, I think the... But I think some of the details still, like, seeing the picture is still better. Like, I have, like, examined, like, high-resolution images of the Sistine Chapel just to look at all the finer details of the drawings. And to imagine that this was painted upside down, that blows my mind. The whole setup of it. Cool. I think my one short comment is about the episode that that it was recorded when I wasn't here with you and Sharul, right? There was quite a lot of comments about it and everything, but I do want to point out one of the more positive ones about it, where Jungle Jimbo, longtime listener, said that he enjoyed the variety of Sharul providing a female co-host voice on the Yalabat episode, right? That's really something that we don't have a lot of, right? Female voice on a podcast, which we are trying to get more guests who are willing to come and speak and all that, right? But for you, how did it feel like, getting representation on the podcast and everything?
I think getting someone from a different background or profile or demographic is always good, because so many times we talk about stuff that one thing we spoke about on a previous episode was a survey that kind of, like I said, that 60% of Singapore men feel that the push for feminism is discriminating men. So we know we're two guys, so getting an external perspective is useful. Then the next question is whether that external person or the guest can actually give or add to the discussion or provide insightful feedback. So we're definitely going to do more of that, getting more guests on. More co-hosts, I guess. More diverse co-hosts.
But the favorites will always be there, right? The Rishis and the Andes.
Because I think it's important that a guest comes on and they do their homework.
And embrace the format, right?
And back up what they say with evidence and points and notes.
Correct. I agree. But that's a good positive to come out from a podcast that I wasn't part of.
Correct.
But cool. And what is your one shook thing?
My one shook thing is a sports phenomenon that I only came to be aware about last week. It is the phenomenon of Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yes.
You heard Caitlin Clark, right? I had no idea, but I can't remember how I saw it, but the college, the WNBA draft just got done this past Monday.
Yeah.
And she was number one on the pick. And her background is that she was a college athlete and, I think undisputedly the highest scoring college basketball player, men and women, of all time. She single-handedly made the college basketball, women's college basketball, one of the most watched sports competitions in the US. I think the final of the NCAA Division I women's basketball, where her team played against another team, was the most watched basketball final since 2019. Including men's, including NBA.
I was like,
who the hell is this person? And she's just a very talented basketballer that has drawn a lot of attention to the WNBA and is now going to be playing in the WNBA. She can shoot three-pointers. She can do layups. She's a point guard, I think. And interesting, because every once in a while you get these athletes that really elevate a sport. Of course, you get some of the ex-players who say that, she's not that great. She goes to WNBA, she'll get destroyed. But still feels like I've never been interested in the WNBA before.
Yeah.
And I'm eager to see how that pans out.
There's been a lot of buzz about her entry into the professional basketball, right? I think it points to, I think women's basketball needed this woman. They needed someone to made the college tournament very exciting this year. Everyone was watching it.
And her team still lost.
They didn't win. But now we see what's the next stage.
Dominating. So interesting. Interesting. What about you, man?
Funnily enough, my one short thing is also from World Basketball. But it's actually from a podcast by the former player JJ Redick, which I highly recommend. I think I can't remember what's the name of the podcast, Three Old Men or something like that. The Old Man and the Three. The Old Man and the Three. But yeah, he spoke to a player that, you know, from my era watching basketball, Ray Allen, very one of the legendary three-point shooters of the game, right? And it was just a segment where he talks about how Ray Allen now teaches jump shooting basketball. And so Ray Allen goes into, I mean, he's a legendary three-point shooter, but he talks about how he coaches kids to learn how to shoot the basketball properly. And what was interesting, they really talk about the mechanics of the hand when shooting a basketball and which parts of your hand should be touching the basketball as it leaves your hand and everything. And yeah, I mean, these are things, I play basketball recreationally for very long already, but I don't think about some of these things that they talked about in here.
Oh, really? Yeah.
For example, they say like when you want to throw a baseball, for example, you always throw it holding it with your fingers and maybe the top of your palm, right? But the bottom of your palm almost never touches the thing. And that's because if your bottom of your palm is involved in the spin of the ball, it's not really, you lose control, your wrist lose control, yeah, it becomes your arm that controls it, right?
Oh.
So you want to isolate control of the ball only in your wrist. And so the principle is the same for basketball, where when you want to shoot the ball, you never let it like touch the inside of your palm all the way. You only keep it at your fingertips. So he's like telling kids, like when you watch them play, it's literally because when they play with real basketballs, it's too big for kids. Their hands are not developed enough. So they will end up developing a very bad habit of heaving the ball with the entire hand, and including the inside of their palm. And then they carry that habit on to their later years as they grow bigger and older. And then so you see a lot of like, not necessarily NBA, but college players who still can't shoot free throws properly, you know? They're heaving it from their chest or something like that.
Oh.
So he's saying that, you know, if you want to teach kids how to play properly, don't give them a real size ball. Give them a smaller ball that fits their hand. And then you really develop a technique so that when they grow into the proper basketball, they carry that technique on without developing the muscle memory of heaving it, because they can't heave the ball. They don't have enough strength to heave a real basketball.
Oh.
So it's damn interesting. And yeah, like, it made me realize that, yeah, you know, a lot of times when we talk about teaching children or that, you say, just throw them the deep end, you know, go and like, just give them the big ball, don't bother buying the small one, that's for small kids and kind of thing. But actually, yeah, there's a lot you can learn by, you know, watching how their strengths and weaknesses, and then working on them before you let them progress to the next stage.
Actually, it's like football also. Because like, even if you take like school training for football when you're young, and all, I don't know how it is now, but they never teach you how to kick a ball.
Then
you end up tonjoling, you know, using your toes to whack.
Exactly.
And I always used to wonder when I was young, I was like, how do these professional players, they make it look so effortless and the ball goes across the field? Nobody taught us. Then you just have to figure out. Then your kicking technique is just shit. And then you have to make up for it with brute force. And it just becomes very messy. That's interesting.
So interesting. And he says, like, you know, like, even as a professional, sometimes you're on the court, then you're shooting balls, then you realize, hey, something is like off at that. Something off about my form today. Something, muscle memory is a bit off. He says that he'll just stop whatever he's doing and just go to the free throw line and just keep doing the same drill until he gets the muscle memory back. So he says that that's his technique of like resetting his muscle memory.
But during a game, cannot?
No, I mean, not during a game, during practice. You know, there's always like sometimes during practice or like, hey, something off about my stroke or something off about the way I kick and all. He said there's always, your body knows, and you just need to get back to what you're very familiar with, reset it, then go back to it again. So I learned stuff from it that I was like, oh, actually, that makes a lot of sense.
So next time you're playing recreational, you stop the game. Guys, I need to go to the free throw line. For 30 minutes, everyone's just waiting like, what the fuck, Terrence? Can you hurry up right now?
But yeah, that it reminds you that, a lot of times you have to think what's age appropriate for your children also to learn and how to learn and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
But yeah, that's the end of the pod, man.
Cool.
Cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, if you enjoyed this podcast, just follow us on our social media. Follow, hit subscribe on Apple, Spotify, leave a rating, and tell one person you know who may not have heard of us.
Yeah.
And
if you want to work with us, you know, check out ministryoffunny.com.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. And so, yeah, welcome to the PM Wong era.
not yet.
Soon.
A month. Yeah, less than a month. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.